Prescott because of what Cam Newton did to them the week before.
Freudian slip.
Are you serious with that mess? So yeah, you're telling me that the team that sat here and got their asses handed to them by Robert Griffin III on Thanksgiving completely forgot that you can run with a quarterback that way?
We're going to have to talk pay cut. And I believe Sean Lee would take the pay cut. He's the constant team guy. I believe he'd take the pay cut. He'd stay on the team. But if for whatever reason his agent was like, hell no, then I'm turning around. I'm bye. I got Leighton Vander Esch here.
Dog, he was in bubble wrap all offseason so that he wouldn't get injured. And then because he was in bubble wrap, he played an absolute horrible game in week one. And then when he seemed to get his act together in week two, he ended up getting injured. And now he's in question for week three. And we've been through this over and over again. And I just feel so bad for him. Like, he's like the little lost puppy in the side of the picture when all the cool kids... Oh, wait, that did happen this week, too.
Absolutely. And when you're done with the JV team, you can come over to the varsity, download CBS Sports. Download the CBS Sports. I can picture your face right now.
I've given him the knowledge that he can go forth into the rest of the week. Excuse me, sir. Grown-ups are talking.
What are you, schizo? Are you having a conversation?
Listen, I'm having a conversation to the audience, and you're interrupting. All right. You are now rocking with the best. Thank you so much for tuning in for another exciting, exhilarating, and awesome episode of Catch This Fade podcast. I am, of course, your host, KD Drummond. Find me on Twitter at KD Drummond NFL. That is my man, 5 grand, Mr. Patrick Walker. Say what's up to the people, Pat.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Week two of the 2018 season, and we are having a much more enjoyable post game this time around.
It is week two going into week three, and the Cowboys are coming off of a 20-13 victory over the New York Giants. It was a dominating performance. Shout out to the dude on Twitter who told me that it couldn't possibly be a dominating performance because they only scored 20 points. And I say, au contraire, mon frere, because it's about how you look in comparison to the team that's on the other sideline. And in comparison, the Cowboys dominated the game and then felt pity for the Giants and let them score 10 points in the last 4 minutes and make it interesting just so they had something to talk about on the plane ride home. But in actuality, the Cowboys were dominant. They were the big play team. They had a lot more, and it was on the strength of the running game as opposed to the passing game. And then things went sideways. I want Pat to take this over and tell the people how he feels about the offensive explosion to start and then what happened after that.
I love it and hate it at the same time. And my thing is, it brings me right back to Scott Linehan because, as you and I both know, KD, so the first few plays of an NFL game are scripted, right?
Yep.
So fantastic job scripting those plays, Scotty. Fantastic job scripting those plays. But then what happened was one of my key points of needed improvement for Linehan again showed itself because after those scripted plays worked, and even if they didn't work, he was going to have to adjust on the fly. So when it came time to adjust and adapt on the fly, we saw the team convert back to their uber conservatism for the next two quarters because they scored 10 points on the first couple of drives, very much in control offensively. Everybody's, confetti rain and yes, Tavon Austin, and this is how the Cowboys offense should look. And everybody was absolutely justified in celebrating. However, Scott Linehan reminded us why we should still be wary going forward because they didn't score another point until the field goals in the third quarter, didn't score another touchdown until Ezekiel Elliott nailed the coffin shut in the fourth quarter. And on that final drive, that touchdown drive that was punctuated by Elliott, Dak Prescott was absolutely masterful. He did what you and I discussed he should do, and he finally cut loose with his legs, and then his accuracy looked great as well. But that's also what took place in the first drive. So they came out unpredictable. They passed on the first play. I didn't know where I was. I thought the world was exploding. Armageddon, the rapture. Christ has returned. Something's not right here. First down, first play from scrimmage, they passed the ball. Oh my God, what's going on? Second play, they handed it off to Ezekiel Elliott to kind of keep the defense honest, keep them cheating forward to set them up for the deep ball on the next play. Fantastic play calling that was scripted, but when it came time to adjust, they couldn't. They couldn't adjust over the course of the remainder of the first quarter, couldn't adjust at all in the second quarter. Third quarter still looked inept for the most part, only got a field goal, and it was not until Dak Prescott started cutting loose again, and then he took over the drive with his arm and his legs, and that set up Ezekiel Elliott to nail the coffin shut. So, yes, the Cowboys did, in fact, dominate the New York Giants, and the score shouldn't have been 20-13. They let them get 10 garbage time points. But even if the score was 20-3, that still was not as – that's not indicative of what actually happened on the field. The Giants flat out got their asses kicked. The Cowboys' defense was just phenomenal. We'll talk about that in a second. But, you know, going forward, obviously, we're all in on this defense. They're not even whole, and they're playing, you know, with like their hair is on fire. This offense, though, we saw what they can do. And now I don't – KD, I don't know if I'm – upset now because I feel like you teased me. Like, don't tease me, right? Like, if you're going to be bad, just be bad, right? Don't show me you can be great and then go back to being bad and then be great again. And then at the end of it all, say, I promise you we'll be great permanently going forward. I don't believe you. I just believe that you'll be able to do just enough to get, you know, as many wins as you can get, but at the same time, playing the way they played, letting teams like the Giants stay close. If you let the Seattle Seahawks stay close in Seattle, desperately facing an 0-3 start, you're going to leave with an L. You're going to leave with an L. So you can't play that kind of game. The offense put their foot on the throat of the Giants, should have kept it there. They got to learn from that mistake going forward. That's just how I feel.
You know, I don't appreciate you putting me in the position to be the voice of reason, because everybody knows that I'm way more high strung than you when it comes to pretty much everything. I don't really like to be the voice of reason. This is an unfair position that you're putting me in, but I'm going to have to do it.
Yeah, show me some range. You gotta have range, man. Show me some range.
Let me ask you this question.
Yo.
At what point of the game against the Giants did you feel that the Cowboys were threatened?
I'm not going to lie to you. I was getting nervous going into the half and particularly going into the middle of the third quarter. You saw my tone on Twitter when I was just like, look, I don't know who ordered this vanilla ice cream, but bring back the cookies and cream. And it's just because we've seen them let a team like the Giants hang around before.
Okay, right.
And then
but
pull something out of his head.
You just made my part of my point for me. You were worried more about what the Cowboys' history was than what was actually happening on the field, because there was absolutely nothing that the Giants were doing on the field that should have made the field that should have made the Cowboys feel threatened in any way, shape, or form. So when a team like the Cowboys, and granted, this team is never going to be the Rams. Like, under this offensive hierarchy, we're not going to be this uber creative Andy Reid disciple McVay terminology type of offensive explosion team. That's just not happening under this regime. What they will do is occasionally break out things that they need to surprise the defense, which is what we saw with the scripted plays. And then once they realized that the Giants were no threat at all, they said, why in the world would, with our limited vocabulary when it comes to calling offensive plays, why would we go ahead and expose ourselves? Of course they pull back the reins. I have absolutely no problem with them doing that and going bland again. And then look what happened. When things felt a little bit strange and the Giants scored that field goal and we got to the end of the third quarter, what happened when the Cowboys got the ball back? They bludgeoned them. They took 8 minutes and 23 seconds off of the clock doing whatever they wanted, converting fourth downs, running with Dak Prescott, throwing with Prescott. Ezekiel was an animal. Everybody was doing their job when it came down time to it. So you had a brilliant start to the game, then you pulled off the gas pedal, and then when it was time to put the game away, you put the game away. I have no problems whatsoever with what happened. And you spoke about the first downs, and you were surprised that they threw in the first down on the first play of the game. You know that the Cowboys have called just as many runs and passes on first down.
Yeah,
so far
I know they're
season.
About even there. I'm just saying, yeah. From scrimmage. Like,
yeah, from,
you got to admit that the first play from scrimmage, that was kind of wonderfully unexpected. And it might have been based on the tone going into the game.
That's 100% understandable, because even I was pissed off earlier when I heard Stephen Jones, executive VP, talk about the fact that they basically decided to run Dak Prescott because of what Cam Newton did to them the week before.
Freudian slip.
Are you serious with that mess? So yeah, you're telling me that the team that sat here and got their asses handed to them by Robert Griffin III on Thanksgiving completely forgot that you can run with a quarterback that way?
And here's what makes it even more concerning. And see, now you're kind of bringing it full circle back to my concern. And although I labeled it with Linehan, and rightfully so, he's the offensive coordinator. Look at what Stephen Jones said this week. So if you thought what he said last week was maddening, look what he said this week. So you come out of the game like week one, and you're like, okay, clearly one of the reasons you lost that game was because you wouldn't let Dak Prescott cut loose, in addition to the fact that he didn't decide to cut loose as an individual with his own brain waves, right? So on the heels of that, you got Jerry Jones saying we need to run Dak Prescott more, but you got Stephen Jones saying, oh, well, not necessarily, right? So, Stephen, what the hell are you talking about? Now they go into week two, and lo and behold, Dak Prescott starts running the ball, opening up that extra dimension of play that we all know is there and we all know is required for this Cowboys offense to win games. It is successful. And Jerry Jones this week says, haha, I told you, and we're going to keep running Dak Prescott more. Stephen Jones is like, well, we shouldn't keep exposing our quarterback like that. What are you talking about? You realize that's why you won the game. Now, when I talk about defense, because truly defense is, you know, more or less why you won this game and why you should have won week one. But speaking strictly on offense, Stephen Jones, I just want to know, what game are you watching? Because running Dak Prescott and having that balance between that and the pass, that's what makes your RPO and that threat more dynamic. That's what backs the defense up. That's what keeps those linebackers on their heels. And let me tell you something about keeping linebackers on their heels. Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright are predicted to be on the field for week three. You can try to pull that week one nonsense all you like and try to force Dak Prescott to be a pocket passer. That's going to make the job of Wagner and KJ Wright that much easier, and you're going to pay for it. You're going to pay for it. So
yeah, what we saw in the game, there were a couple passes that Dak Prescott let loose on and probably should have been intercepted. He didn't have a great game outside of the first couple plays. He didn't have a great game. There's no denying that. I worry about, you mentioned Wagner and KJ Wright being on the field in week three. I'm worried about the dude that's supposed to be wearing a star on his helmet right now. I'm worried about what's going to happen if Dak Prescott tries one of them deep passes and Earl Thomas is back there. Man, listen.
All the board.
Listen. I'm a little bit concerned about Seattle. Now, I laid down in one of the videos this morning all of the great things about the Dallas defense going up against the Seattle offense. But still, even with all of their replacements, with the guys coming back, they have Earl Thomas, and with getting those linebackers back, even though their pass rush isn't really anything to speak of and their cornerbacks might not be up to par, there's still a fear factor when it comes to Seattle's defense. And they're going into their home opener. They've won 9 games in a row as far as their home openers, been on the road for 2 weeks, and they didn't look good at all. But yeah, you kind of have to still be concerned with what the Seattle Seahawks can possibly bring to you, especially I brought up the point about Chris Richard getting his revenge game, but Pete Carroll is kind of knows what Chris Richard is going to be doing out there on defense. So this is probably going to be a good test, even with all the struggles that the Seattle offense is having right now.
Agreed. And it's kind of like you said, and I mean, it's going to be a chess match because, yes, on one end, we see everyone saying, and rightfully so, we see everyone saying, well, Chris Richard has the inside track to Pete Carroll. Yeah, well, that pendulum swings both ways. Pete Carroll is the one that hired him in the first place, right? So, you know, and he spent all those years with him. He knows exactly what the playbook is for Chris Richard. And keep in mind, Chris Richard helped install or at least overhaul the Cowboys playbook and inject a lot of his own schemes and things like that, personnel packages. So he brought that over from Seattle. Pete Carroll's one of the, whether you like him or not, he's one of the most intelligent football minds in the NFL. He's great at adapting. Aside from what happened with the Bears, that was just a weird game to see them. But then, I mean, really, what could you do? You don't have an offensive line. What could you do? But here's where I think things are going to get kind of weird for the Seahawks. It seems like there's this, and I don't want to make it anything more than what it is. But the fact is, it might have been today or yesterday, Pete Carroll criticized And it might have been constructive criticism, as Pete Carroll sees it, but he criticized Russell Wilson, and he said he was, quote unquote, over trying. Okay, if you take that comment and then you look back at the game, there was one particular stretch of clip, of video, where you saw Wilson check out of the play that was called, and then it was successful. I think he checked down to a run and it got like 8 or 9 yards. Play call came in again. The very next play call, he checked out of it again, and then Pete Carroll called timeout. And then you saw a visibly frustrated Wilson walk over to the sidelines, you know, throwing his arms up like, what are you doing? What are you doing? So now tie that into what Pete Carroll said about he thinks Russell is over trying. I think they're on two different pages. I think Russell is feeling like, hey, I got to do what I got to do to survive and try to win this game. Pete Carroll is like, no, you need to trust the plays. So that could be an interesting dynamic that shows itself in week three and could end up playing in favor of the Cowboys. But again, that doesn't change what happens on the other side of the ball, because like you said, we got Wright, we got Wagner to deal with, you got Earl Thomas back there. Dak Prescott tries to get cute with the arm, he might end up paying for it. And although the Seahawks aren't fantastic with the pass rush, like the Cowboys having 9 sacks over the first 2 games, they can still get to the quarterback. And if Dak Prescott forgets that he can run again like he did in week one, or if he, you know, subscribes to what Stephen Jones is saying and just chooses not to take off because he doesn't want to, quote unquote, overexpose himself, if he sits in that pocket, he's going to get bruised. He's going to get bruised. And it might not be to the tune of 6 sacks, might be only 3 or 4 sacks, but he's going to pay for it.
It's interesting. I want to circle back on something. It's interesting that you mentioned Pete Carroll talking about that Russell Wilson is over trying. You know, he said the same thing back. That's like kind of one of those words for Pete Carroll. I guess he said the same thing about Russell Wilson back in November 2012. So we're talking about early in Wilson's career. So maybe he's trying to hark back and inspire something, you know, that maybe turned a switch for him earlier in his career by using that specific language. But I just thought that was interesting. Anyway, so we were talking about the Seattle offense. Pete Carroll is talking about Russell Wilson over trying. He's not really only talking bad about his quarterback. He's also talking bad about himself. And I found this interesting because he sounds like he's falling on a sword for his coordinator, Brian Schottenheimer. If you don't know, Schottenheimer is one of really the most nepotism benefiting in the history of history. He has had one top 15 defense and in his 11 years as an offensive coordinator in the NFL. This is year number 12. He's basically done one mediocre offense in the course of time, but yet he keeps getting jobs, and it has a lot to do with his last name. It is what it is. But Pete Carroll today said basically he took responsibility for the strange offensive play calling, but according to my Seattle guy, it's Schottenheimer that's doing all of the play calling. Now, correct. Pete Carroll has ability to overcall, you know, override a call or whatever, but he said, this is what he said, Carroll on so many pass plays, my impatience, figuring we should be on the board more than we have. I'm over that. Threw the ball more than we needed to. I'm owning up. That's the issue with that. I'm impatient. So he's telling me that they're going to go back to being run first and then limiting what Russell Wilson is doing with the ball in his hands. They already immobilized him. So I'm feeling pretty good about the prospects of the Dallas Cowboys defense.
Don't buy it. Don't buy it. I mean, well, listen, feel good about it because you should, because they're absolutely balling. And, you know, when you get 6 sacks, and yeah, you can say, oh, well, the Giants offensive line isn't good, when neither is the Seahawks offensive line. So I say that to say, if you can get 6 sacks against the Giants, and that's not saying DeMarcus Lawrence got 3 sacks and then another guy got 2 and then Malik Collins threw in 1. That's 6 sacks over the spread over 6 guys.
Right. Now,
that's 6 different guys. These blitz packages the Cowboys are sending, they are a thing of beauty. Hang them up in the Smithsonian. They are art. Okay. But that being said, I also believe that, and this is what I believe is going to play in the Cowboys' favor, I think Pete Carroll is bluffing. I think he's just trying to throw the Cowboys off the scent. Right, saying, oh, well, I'm over trying to do too many pass plays. We're going to get back to running the ball. You don't have the offensive line to run the ball, okay? And then you're running into – and granted, the Cowboys need to improve their run defense because it's the only thing in some of the top categories that's outside of the top 5 And it kind of falls down to top 12. So that's kind of the anomalous part of their statistical defense, or their defense statistics going forward, I should say. But still, they're only allowing 91 rushing yards per game on average. And the Seahawks, again, they don't have the offensive line. They don't have a dominant running back. And over the course of the past couple of years, their leading rusher has been who? Russell Wilson. So if you contain Russell Wilson, you're basically containing 60%, 65% of their offense, okay? And I don't know any other way to say it other than to say it directly, Pete, I'm not buying it. We don't believe you. You need more people.
More people.
Okay. You need more people. You don't have the personnel to bluff. You don't have, you're a poker player, KD, right? You're a poker player, right?
I am.
A guy sitting there with a horrible hand and he's sweating bullets, but he wants you to believe his bluff. We don't believe you, right?
Listen, it's just not going to happen. The Cowboys, at least over these first couple of weeks, appear to have a distinct advantage when it comes to the offensive and defensive lines with the Cowboys on defense. The Cowboys have they rank third in the NFL right now in sacks per pass attempt with 12.9%. That means 12.9% of the time the opposition drops back, the Cowboys are getting home. They're second in the league in sacks with 9, tied for 5th and 4th fumbles, so they are making noise. What they aren't doing is intercepting the ball, but they are still up there relatively high in the top 12 in pass deflections. So they're getting their hands on the ball. They're just not turning it over in that way, even though they're high up there with forced fumbles. The beautiful part about the scenario is Seattle is giving up a sack on 17.4% of pass attempts. That's the absolute worst in the league, and they just lost their center. Justin Britt is probably not going to play in this game.
Right.
So the Cowboys should be able to do what they want. If they're going to focus on the run, we know the Cowboys stop the run on the way to the quarterback, so I really don't see any difference there. And the way that these guys are playing in the middle right now, I'm actually more confident, even though it looks like we'll probably be without Malik Collins. He's injured again. And then we have...
don't do that.
I'm just saying.
Though you're right, he's injured, quote-unquote, again, which is true. But it had up to this point, it's not affected his regular season availability. So if he does miss this game, I think it'll only be because he had coming into the season, I think he played 32 of 33 games or something to that availability. So it'd be fair in that capacity is what I'm saying.
It's more of a snapshot that he has, you know, nagging injuries this year.
He's
been in and out. You're right. It's not like he's Sean Lee or anything. So, Sean Lee is on the resistance corps today as of Wednesday. There is hope that his soft tissue injury known as his hamstring, I do need to be specific because it's Sean Lee and saying soft tissue injury really could apply to multiple different things with him. I'm just saying.
I can't find a lie, so go ahead.
No, he was in bubble wrap all offseason so that he wouldn't get injured. And then because he was in bubble wrap, he played an absolute horrible game in week one. And then when he seemed to get his act together in week two, he ended up getting injured. And now he's in question for week three. And we've been through this over and over again. And I just feel so bad for him. Like, he's like the little lost puppy in the side of the picture when all the cool kids... Oh, wait, that did happen this week, too.
Yikes. You said that all.
All right. So
savage. Well, here's my thing with Lee. My thing with Lee is this: like you said, they kept him in bubble wrap, right? And I don't believe I'm mistaken in believing that. On top of that, they shaved back some of his snaps later in week one to kind of prevent injury, which is a terrifying thought in and of itself. But then he still missed a couple of tackles in week two. He's not looking like the Sean Lee that we've come to know. And then you start to wonder between the injuries and he is 32 years old, which Sean Lee are we going to get for the remainder of the season? And this is something that I put out there on Twitter at Voice of the Star, shameless plug. This was a few weeks back when I said, don't be surprised if Sean Lee gets released in 2019. And I said at that point, it would probably be on the heels of him missing several games again. But if he keeps playing like he is right now, even if he plays the full the full campaign. If he keeps missing tackles and has to come off the field because he has quote-unquote cramps or hamstring tightness or whatever the case may be, you look at that plus his salary cap hit for 2019, and you got your answer. And don't come to me with that loyalty stuff, because if you haven't learned yet, Stephen Jones don't give two damns.
Dog, okay. I ain't gonna come to you with nothing about loyalty. You know, I done remixed that recently, and it's all about royalty, royalty, royalties. I'm talking about taking some dollars off the top. I've been talking about them getting rid of Sean Lee since the offseason, because it's one for one thing, based off of last year and what they missed, I had the idea that there was no point in depending on Sean Lee because you just didn't know. Now, for me, the Cowboys continue to contradict themselves when it comes to their plan for the linebacker core, but I am going to readily admit how thankful I am that with what we're seeing here, there is a possibility, there is a possibility that they are going to be able to make a smooth transition from Lee. I do not think he's done yet. I think he still has 2 years, and the Cowboys are going to keep him around for the simple fact that we saw Jason Witten decline for 5 straight years and they kept him around without coming up with a backup plan. Now, they do have a backup plan for Lee, but I still don't think they're going to unceremoniously. I don't think you say that Stephen Jones isn't malicious. I mean, is malicious like that? There are some people that are about to get clipped, but there's some people that aren't in that target range. And Jason Witten, Sean Lee, for whatever reason, they're guys that I just can't see the Cowboys ever walking away from unless a contract is over.
No, sir. I'm going to completely disagree in the aspect of so you used Witten as a point. Okay, cool. But let's not pretend that Witten didn't leave under his own fruition for two reasons. One, like Monday Night Football come around? Okay.
I readily admit that.
Right. And two, he saw the writing on the wall. Witten is no fool. Okay. He saw that he was going to be one of the last men standing, and he was not safe. Des Bryant wasn't safe, right? Tony Romo wasn't safe. That was the triumvirate for years, is those three guys. So he was like, I'm out of here. So now you're looking at someone like Sean Lee. Witten was Mr. Durable, the Iron Man, right? And his production, although it started to wane, like you said, over the course of the past half decade, he was still on the field producing. Lee cannot lay claim to that. He simply cannot lay claim to that. He does not, from the linebacker position, I know it doesn't directly correlate linebacker to tight end, but the two careers are not entirely comparable as far as legend status, because Witten is a definitive legend. You can't really say Sean Lee is a Cowboys legend right now because of all of the unavailability issues. Please do not tell me. And I love Lee. This is not me throwing shade at General Lee, right?
But it is.
No,
and
it's not.
So beautiful. It's so beautiful.
We're gonna talk real, okay? And let's talk real here. This is a player who has had availability issues, okay?
Yep.
Take the name off the back of the jersey. You've seen me say this a lot. Okay, take the name off the back of the jersey. If I show you a player with Lee's inavailability issues,
42 out of 128 games
that have caused those availability issues, and then I tell you that player has missed X amount of tackles already over the course of two games to start the season after not playing in the preseason for the most part, because they wanted to protect him. And then I showed you that he's going to hit the salary cap for over $11 million in 2019. You are going to tell me that you're going to let your emotions override your business sense?
Listen, bro.
I love Lee, but it would be an absolute mistake to completely just ignore what's right in front of you. I hope he balls out and goes right back to Pro Bowl status, which he is very capable of doing in 2018. But in the moment we're speaking right now, take the moment we're in and everything up to this point. A, Witten is a legend, hands down. You cannot say that about Sean Lee. Witten is going into the Hall of Fame, potentially first ballot, most definitely second ballot, if not first. Right now, you can't convince me that Sean Lee is going into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, hell no, he's not going into the Hall of Fame. What are you talking about? That's not even a question.
Exactly. I'm pressed to figure out how he gets into the Ring of Honor. So how do we start using the word legend for Sean Lee? What we should say is he's an all-pro linebacker. He has generational talent that has not consistently materialized. And that's where we are with Sean Lee. And now he's going to hit the cap for $11 million. You're going to have to get – he has to take a pay cut in 2019, even if he plays well in 2018. He has to take a pay cut because if I'm Stephen Jones, which our good friend Joey has accused me of being Stephen Jones every once in a while. If I'm Stephen Jones in the offseason following 2018 – I'm looking at $11 million, and I'm looking at your body of work. They keep preaching body of work, right? I'm looking at your body of work, and I'm like, yeah, no. We're going to have to talk pay cut. And I believe Sean Lee would take the pay cut. He's the constant team guy. I believe he'd take the pay cut. He'd stay on the team. But if for whatever reason his agent was like, hell no, then I'm turning around. I'm bye. I got Leighton Vander Esch here as a backup, as the, you know, the segue from you. Jalen Smith is an absolute animal once again. Damian Wilson looks to be fantastic. And I can hang on to Joe Thomas for another year or so. And that's where we are. So, yeah, we got to stop pretending that Sean Lee is bigger than what he is. But at the same time, let's not take away from what he's capable of and what he's done. That's kind of where we got to toe the line.
It's hilarious for me to listen to you rant like that because it's only the stuff that I've been saying about Sean Lee forever, except for the fact that I just don't have confidence in this organization that they would be willing to walk away from him. I've called for Sean Lee to be one of the people that you can cut to gain cap space every year for the last 3 or 4 years. Every article that I've written in the offseason has included Sean Lee as saying somebody that should and possibly could be cut based on his inavailability. So I am 100% with you for all of the things that you just said, except for the fact that I said what I said, the Cowboys front office will give Lee another chance. I'm trying to tell you, there is some kind of voodoo magic that Sean Lee has over the front office, over the fan base. I am probably going to lose followers just simply by talking this trash about Sean Lee, which is why I'm surprised that you actually came out on this side as well.
It's not talking trash if it's a reality.
It's still talking trash. It is a reality, but it's still talking
This is going back to what you said on your Twitter feed. At Katie Drummond NFL. See, I gave you a shameless plug. When you mentioned facetiously that, you know, heaven forbid anybody say anything about the almighty Sean Lee, right? I think, ladies and gentlemen, you need to understand that we're between Katie and myself, you're always going to get 100% reality. You're always going to get the real. We're not going to spin anything. And if the cake smells great and tastes great, we're going to tell you that. If it, you know, smells okay and it still needs some ingredients, we're going to tell you that as well. And if it's trash, we're going to tell you that it's trash. Sean Lee is not trash, but at the same time, he's not a Hall of Fame player for the Cowboys. And that's kind of where we are. So we're not throwing shade at Lee any more than us telling you that he missed double-digit games over the past 2 years. That's just an objective fact, you know. So these are objective facts. An $11 million cap hit, I think he sticks around, but only if he accepts the pay cut. But bringing that all the way back to 2018, for Lee particularly, it's time for him to kind of show his Pro Bowl / All-Pro level of play right now because we haven't seen it the first two games. Cowboys desperately – they don't need it as desperately as the Seahawks, but they desperately need to avoid going down 1-2 to a 1-2 record facing what they have to face going forward because you still got the Lions coming up. You still got the Texans coming up. You know, these are teams that can give the Cowboys a hard time if the Cowboys get behind score-wise. So handle these games while you can. The Seahawks is going to be huge for both the record and momentum, and Sean Lee's going to have to be huge in that game. Otherwise, that will be three games now that we're still asking, where's Sean Lee?
Listen, I actually have confidence in Sean Lee's still going to have a strong season. I'm just so tired of having to deal with him being out in the victory was going to happen with the defense. You know, there was some of that that just happened in the last game against Giants. Sean Lee was out and they, you know, we chalked it up to them playing, you know, prevent defense and not really caring, just kind of trying to keep everything in front of them. But Sean Lee was out with that hamstring injury, and things didn't go very well. So We really do need Sean Lee. I don't think that despite all of the advancements that the defensive linebackers have made, talking about Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch, I love what Jalen Smith is doing right now. I am very excited for the young man. When he carried Odell Beckham up the field on that play where Jeff Heath almost came in bounds for the interception, that was it. That was it, man. Jalen Smith is back 100%.
Welcome back.
Listen, I'm loving every bit of that. So I do have more confidence than I did in the offseason about them being able to withstand Lee not being in there. I think Joe Thomas getting reps in the week of practice will play a big role in how well he could play in his stead when he comes in and maybe takes on a bigger role. Leighton Vander Esch, he's coming on. They're increasing his snaps. So, yeah, there's plenty to work with at the linebacker core, which is more so part of the reason why I wanted to get rid of Lee. I think the best way to describe it is I'm just overall frustrated with everything that the Cowboys have done at the linebacker core over the last several years. They had Lee, and he was frustrating because he's always injured. Everybody knows that I wasn't on board with them spending the second-round pick on Jalen Smith. 2 years later, you still have a lost 2 years. But he is definitely working out right now. And in the future, it looks more than bright. I have to wear shades doing a damn podcast because of how bright this guy's future is. And Leighton Vander Esch seems like he could do some things.
Miss tackles. I tell you that.
But when I look around the league, he was a tackling machine in the short amount of time he was out there. But when I look around the league and I see the other options that we could have had for a cheaper price and know what we could have had with a first round pick and ended up with a guy like Darius Leonard, if we had done something different, if we had gotten our tackle or offensive lineman in the first round, Connor Williams, if we had done something like Will Hernandez or one of the other guys. If we'd done that in the first round and then gone linebacker in second, gotten some guy like Darius Leonard or what's the guy from BYU? Wagner, I believe his name is. He's doing well. Shaquem Griffin was doing well in his first game with Seattle. There were just other options there. So even though I feel like the linebackers are now going to be a strength of this team, I still don't like the way it was constructed. And a lot of people are just end result oriented. If it's good in the end, that's all that matters. But the journey is everything, and the time wasted and the resources that could have been allocated differently are things that are important to me when it comes to team building. So I'm still a little bit frustrated, but I'm happy now that we're in the season that I have all three of those talents to try to stop Russell Wilson on Sunday.
I'm the same way in regards to it's about the journey because, you know, the journey is what makes you who you are. And at the same time, I do understand the ends justify the means crowd, but it all has to be a balance. So, you know, did the Cowboys handle this, you know, perfectly? Well, that's subjective. But in the end, whatever they feel they did wrong, they learned from it. That's progress. But in the end, like you said, we're looking at, you know, the future of this team being Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith and Damian Wilson. Oh, man. that's as attractive as it gets. I mean, that rivals and arguably is going to be one of the best linebacker cores in the NFL over the course of the next 2 to 3 seasons. We'll see how things shake out with Sean Lee. But I'm really curious because after the first game, everybody asked me, well, you know, well, Pat, are you worried about Sean Lee? And I was like, he didn't really play coming into the regular season. They wanted to protect him from injury, so got some rust there, et cetera, et cetera. But now this is 2 straight weeks we're talking about Sean Lee missing tackles. That's not
well,
Sean Lee.
I only had him down for one missed tackle. Now, it's still egregious because it's Sean Lee. He played all the games last year. What was it, 12 games did he suit up for last year? And he missed 7 tackles on the season. He's now missed 5. He missed 4 in the first 5. Game, missed 1 in the second game. So, it is still a very high total. But one of the positives that I did see from him in this past game was the fact that when he was making stops, he was making impactful stops. Tackles, he was making impactful stops because on every single one of his tackles, 4 of them, he was able to keep the offense from making a successful gain of yards or what would be considered a successful gain of yards, which is 40% of the yards to go on first down, 60% on second down, 100% on third or fourth down. All 4 of his tackles kept the offense from being successful on those plays. So for me, what I saw before he got injured was, okay, Sean Lee is going to be okay. He did miss a 1 play, but Sean Lee is going to be okay. And then he got injured. For me, this is more about him being injured than a loss, than a decline of skills. That's it to me.
And that could be it. And for me, I just want reassurances. And my reassurances from Sean Lee is going to be, predicated upon what I see on a week-to-week basis. I'm not, and he did improve over week one, which kind of goes to the thought that maybe he just had some rust. So that's good. That's promising. I love it. That's something for me to hold on to in a big way. But it's going to be put to the test in a major way with the mobility of Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson is quicker and faster than Cam Newton. Excuse me. So now is going to be the time, and then like we both know how often the Cowboys run their nickel set with two linebackers. So between Jalen Smith and Sean Lee, those two being able to stop and contain Wilson on those rollouts and challenge him up the middle on those blitzes, that's going to be key in helping the pass rush as a whole fluster Wilson into throwing these interceptions, because he's throwing them. Cowboys haven't reeled any in thus far, but it's interesting that you brought that point up a bit earlier, because I mentioned that point in a conversation I had on Cowboys Starcast with Jamie Horton. He asked me directly, am I concerned about the lack of interceptions? And my answer was no. And that's because when you see some of the other numbers that the Cowboys are putting up defensively, I can forgive them for not, intercepting the ball just yet. Jeff Heath came, extremely close in week one. But look at some of these other numbers, and we're so accustomed to the Cowboys defense bending but don't break, bending but don't break. This secondary isn't bending at all in 2018. They're not bending. So that makes me a little bit more forgiving, or a lot more forgiving, on the interception front, because they're forcing fumbles, they're taking fumbles away, they're getting quarterback hits, they're turning those quarterback hits into sacks, so forth and so on. So I think the interceptions are going to come in short order. I wouldn't be surprised if they get three over the next two games. Put me down for that, so I can say that as a receipt should that occur. So I'm not really worried about the interceptions. What I am worried about is making sure that the linebacker play remains consistent. I think Sean Lee's going to remain consistent. I think Damian Wilson is a great, great talent. Made me really nervous in the first game, but man, you talk about a guy that bounced back big in week two, and I think he's going to carry that energy over. So for me, it's just Sean Lee, and it's not me doubting Sean Lee. It's just me saying with an eyebrow raised that, hey, this isn't the Lee that I'm used to. I do see the improvement over week one, but the real test is another real test, a bigger test is going to come now, because it's not Eli Manning. And although Cam Newton can run, Cam Newton is not like Russell Wilson. Those are two different type of scrambling quarterbacks. Those are two different types. Wilson, number one, tell me that you don't agree with this. Wilson is a more accurate quarterback than Cam Newton.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Wilson is also more dynamic as far as making something out of a broken play with his arm. So the play can break down, and he'll roll out, and you still don't know if he's going to make that play downfield. Reminiscent of Tony Romo, but just a bit faster Tony Romo. Whereas Cam Newton, once Cam Newton gets out of the pocket, you're not really worried about him throwing, because if he throws it, it's going to be inaccurate. So you're really just trying to catch him and run him down. You can't do that with Russell Wilson. You got to play contained as much as anything. So you can't really just bear down on him like a train coming down the tracks once he starts rolling out, because he'll throw that ball over your damn head and it will be spot on. So that's what I mean. It's going to be the biggest challenge thus far in this young season for Sean Lee and that linebacker core. And I'm looking forward to seeing it. I think they're going to step up to the plate. I think they're going to knock it out the park. And then it just puts the ball right back in the offense's hands and say, hey, which offense are you going to show me? Week one or week two?
Well, you don't even like week two's offense. You only like part of it because you had to be explained of what the Cowboys' actual philosophy was during that game. And that's the note that we're going to end it on. Another sunning by me on Patrick Walker. I've given him the knowledge that he can go forth into the rest of the week. Excuse me, sir. Grown-ups are talking.
I didn't like it.
Sir, grown-ups are talking.
what are you, skin so? Are you having a conversation?
Listen, I'm having a conversation to the audience, and you're interrupting. As I was saying,
I'm waiting for anyone. You
realize who edits these shows, right? You understand that I can chop out you for the last 27 minutes and just have dead air and be having a perfectly fine conversation with the audience by myself.
This whole episode, I've been sunning you and been watching the
I've just been sitting here listening to you. I've been listening to you.
Short video the whole
I've been
time
listening just... to you regurgitate things that I said over the last year, and I just found it hilarious. So I've let you get on with your soapbox, and that's what I've done. I allowed you to have the floor. You got on the soapbox, and you regurgitated things that I said over the last year. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in to another episode of Catch This Fade podcast. I am, of course, KD Drummond. Follow me on Twitter at KD Drummond NFL. You can find me on CowboysWire.com, and don't forget to download the SportsWire app. Make sure that you subscribe to the Cowboys Wire and any other team coverage that you want out of the Sports Wire app. Get all of the information right in the palm of your hands. And Pat has some information for you, too.
Absolutely. And when you're done with the JV team, you can come over to the varsity, download CBS Sports. Download the CBS Sports. I can picture your face right now. Download the CBS Sports app for everybody that's on the move. If you're sitting at your desktop, it's 247sports.com/NFL/Dallas-Cowboys. Make sure that you follow me at Voice of the Star on Twitter. And KD knows he's my guy. This is my man, 100 grand, and we have a lot of fun. We go back and forth, and you guys never know if we're serious or if we're not serious, and that's how it should be. But thanks for tuning in. And we will see you guys hopefully next week. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes so you're always ahead of the curve and getting these episodes before the rest of the free world, because you're elite and you deserve elite things. And that's pretty much all I got from Katie. How about you?
This is what happens when you don't burp the baby. This is how they grow up. I'm out of here.
Salute. Burp the quarterback, KD. Stop trying to burp the quarterback. That's a flag now. It's a flag.
We gone, people. We're out of here. Tune in next week for another exciting episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go subscribe. We out.
Salute.
Martin had a dream. Martin had a dream. Kendrick have a dream. All my life I want money and power. Respect my mind or die from less y'all. I pray my get big as the Eiffel Tower, so I can f*** the world for 72 hours. Goddamn, I feel amazing. Damn, I'm in the matrix. My mind is living on cloud nine, and this nine is never on vacation. Start up that Maserati and vroom, vroom, I'm racing. Popping pills in the lobby, and I pray they don't find her naked. And I pray you is aging. Shooters go after Judas. Jesus Christ, if I live life on my knees, ain't no need to do this. Park it in front of looters. Next to that church is chicken. All you put is losers. All my is winning, screaming all my life. I want money and power. Respect my mind or die from less child. I pray my get big as the Eiffel Tower. So I